Welcome to the Compliance Perspectives Podcast. I'm Adam Turteltaub from the Society of Corporate Compliance and Ethics and Healthcare Compliance Association. Joining us today from Washington, D.C. is Jonathan Arany. Jonathan is a partner at Shepherd Mullin and has been good enough to speak at a SEC conference in the past. Jonathan, thanks for taking the time to talk to us today.
Well, thank you for having me. Good morning.
Good morning. Now, we're going to talk about NDAA Section 889, and that's something I think most people are less familiar with than most. So you could start by explaining what it is and what was the impetus behind it.
Now, absolutely, and it's probably good most people are not familiar with it. It doesn't make for the best cocktail conversation. So Section 889 is a part of the Defense Authorization Act. And some people kind of affectionately call it the Anti-Huawei Act. What it does is it really precludes the government from purchasing goods or services that use technology produced by the company Huawei and four other named companies as well. And really the impetus for the act is the government, U.S. government's fear that these companies are using their technology to really spy, to gather data from U.S. companies through kind of, you know, backdoors and loopholes in the technology.
Well, what's notable about this, I think, is, you know, I started learning about it to prepare for this podcast, is that its reach is farther than many might think. Can you tell us how far it extends?
Yes, absolutely. And you're right about the reach. This is one of those kind of sleepy laws that people don't know about, and then they get very surprised when they realize it almost certainly covers them in one way or another. So as far as the reach goes, there are two parts of the rule. There's a Part A and a Part B. Part A, which already applies, it's already the law of the land. It went, regulations went into effect in August 2019. That part covers any technology from these companies in a product sold to the government. It also covers any technology used in a service performed for the government. So that is in effect right now. But reaching even farther is what happens in August 2020. In August 2020, Part B of the rule kicks in, and that actually covers the use of this technology, even if not in the performance of a government contract. So, you know, say you're a company that sells something to the government. Come August 2020, now you have to start asking whether your back office computers might have this technology in it, or your laptops or telephones, even the thermostat in your office building. You need to know if that has the covered technology in it. You think about companies or higher education institutions or any organization that has, say, lab equipment that has kind of an IT core. You have to worry about that lab equipment. Hospitals have to worry about their medical devices. So that really August 2020 is when it gets really, really broad.
Yeah, and it sounds like companies need to start preparing now. Now, one of the things that I think is interesting is it's likely to have a huge impact on higher education. I mean, that's not an economic sector one immediately thinks of when it comes to actions of this type.
No, you're exactly right. When most of these procurement rules come out, higher education often thinks it has very little to do with them. But 889 is going to hit the higher ed sector, I think, in two ways. First of all, if a college or university enters into government contracts, as many of them do, often performing services for the government, research development services, et cetera. Well, those contracts are already covered by the rule because Part A of the rule already is in effect. So any education institution that has a government contract is already covered by that. Also the rule covers grants. So a university that enters into grants is covered by Part A of the rule already as well. Another piece I think higher education institutions really need to think about is their hospital and healthcare piece. many, many higher education institutions might say service a veterans or, you know, service, take on other government contracts. So there are multiple ways this rule gets funneled right into the heart of a higher education compliance program. And then come August 2020, where it starts to go beyond the equipment actually used on the contract. If any universities at that time that hold government contracts, they're going to have to now start worrying about, you know, the computers in the professors' offices. One piece of good news on that, as it's currently written, it does not appear that if a university is merely a grant recipient as opposed to a contractor, if that's the case, it looks like only Part A of this rule will hit the university and not this use provision of Part B. At least based on how it's written currently, that seems to be the case.
Well, but sounds like still need to be watching for it. Now, what other industries are likely to be particularly hard hit?
So this is one of those rules that's going to hit everybody. So certainly core government contractors are going to be particularly hard hit. The Lockheeds and Boeings of the world. Anyone in the IT industry, telecommunications, video surveillance, they're going to be particularly hard hit because the covered technology finds itself in those types of products quite frequently. But I think there's another area that I think is going to have some compliance hurdles here, and it's healthcare, hospitals, and financial institutions. When you think about the reach of this rule, say you're a bank or credit card company or what have you, you have to start thinking about the technology in your local ATM machine. Or if you're a hospital, you have to think about the medical devices in the rooms that nowadays transmit information to the nurses' station. You have to now be worried whether that technology and those products contain any of this covered technology embedded somewhere in it. So I think we're going to see a lot of industries have to take note of this. And like you said, they have to take note of it now because Part A is already in effect.
I think it sounds like they're also going to have to dig from a compliance perspective a lot deeper into what had previously been just left up to IT to deal with, and probably even the IT people weren't looking that deep at these kinds of things, which I guess leads to my next question, which is how should compliance teams best ensure that their organizations don't run afoul of this new provisions?
Well, so Adam, I think you're exactly right that kind of has to be a broader effort beyond just the compliance group, because I mean, purchasing has to play a key role in here. IT is going to have to play a key role as beyond just kind of the compliance and risk department. But I think from a compliance perspective, if we're looking at right now what our obligations are now under Part A of Section 889, I think I'd be focused on making sure I get representations and certifications from anyone I buy equipment from that's going to the government. I'd want to make sure I have certs and reps where I'm doing services for the government. I want to make sure I have certs and reps from the providers of any technology that I use in performance of those services. So say I'm in a university doing research in a back lab somewhere. My lab is filled with technology equipment, and I want to make sure I have certifications from those manufacturers that equipment doesn't include any covered technology. I think with respect to Part B, I mean, what you really have to come up with some sort of a risk-based approach here, right? I mean, universities buy a lot of stuff, and we're obviously not worried about the table and chairs they buy, but we are worried about the IT that they buy and the cameras that they buy. So I think to start thinking about Part B, I think I'd get a multidisciplinary group in the organization and start categorizing the types of indirect purchases you make by risk. Because remember, Part B covers stuff you buy, whether you use it on a government contract or not, right? It covers your fleet of cars. I mean, cars now have telecommunications embedded therein. So I categorize the types of purchases. I probably then develop some sort of standard risk-based process for evaluating the content. Then the ones that are in the high risk and medium risk bucket, I figure out those sources and I get the necessary reps and certs from those sources. Because at the end of the day, you as the contractor or grant recipient have to certify to the government that you're not selling or using stuff that has this technology in it.
So as you're explaining all of that, you know, it struck me, and correct me if I'm wrong here, that all the technology companies are having to comply with this as well, correct, in their own manufacturing, right?
Sure, right. If you're a manufacturer, then you have to be, and let's say you're a manufacturer that does not sell to the government. Well, you have to be in a position to certify to those up the supply chain. So yeah, this hits all levels of the supply chain.
So it seems when it comes to that, you know, if you're a university, a defense contractor, whoever, and you want to buy, let me just say hypothetically, video projectors.
Yep.
It sounds as if, honestly, for the next few years, is, you know, especially as companies get used to this, you're going to be much safer off buying a big name brand one than the guy who comes in with this great deal on stuff you'd never, you know, a company you've never heard of, where you probably won't have the same level of confidence that they've actually done the work to make sure that they're not using the technology that's prohibited.
I think that's a good point. What we're going to see is that I think this is going to particularly hurt small businesses because maybe people are going to perceive them as not having the credibility to make these representations. It's going to hurt companies that don't manufacture their own stuff, but instead have a contract manufacturer, because then the supply chain questions become greater. So I think you're exactly right. There are going to be some companies that find it harder to provide the necessary reps and certs. I think the other thing we'll see here is over time, we're going to start seeing, I mean, almost a cottage industry develop in terms of certifying products as compliant. Like nowadays, we don't think twice when, you know, we buy something for our home and we see it's Energy Star compliant. Well, I think we're going to start seeing companies pop up to certify 889 compliance as well.
Interesting. Well, it'll be interesting to see if that evolves. And obviously, in the short term, before it does, it's going to be a time where there's going to be need to pay close attention to supply chains and who your vendors are, and making sure that what you're buying and what you already have passes muster under Section 889. Well, Jonathan, thank you so much for sharing this insight into what's a new issue that's likely going to be quite the vexing one for people for a while. I want to thank all of you for taking the time to listen today. I'm Adam Turteltaub from SCCE and HCCA saying, I hope we were able to expand your compliance perspective.